from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
It was not a question of if this pipeline would burst. It was a question of when.
That's the opening statement from Deborah A.P. Hersman, who is chair of the National Safety Board, releasing their report today, and they're slated to reveal conclusions in a public hearing all about last year's PG&E San Bruno pipeline explosion. We'll get you an update on it, responses and analysis to the report from a number of officials, a pipeline expert, a San Bruno citizen who was affected by the explosion, and a journalist who has been covering it from the beginning. That's all coming up on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. And in this Forum opening hour, we turn our attention to the final report of the National Transportation Safety Board on the devastating PG&E natural gas pipeline explosion that occurred last year on the 9th of September in San Bruno, south of San Francisco. It killed 8 people, destroyed 38 homes, 58 were injured in the explosion, and 70 homes were damaged. And I must say that this is the most comprehensive investigation yet of not only the wide-ranging importance in terms of what happened, but trying to get down to the origins of this explosion and make recommendations about what can happen in the future or not happen in the future, try to prevent what happened, obviously, in San Bruno. There are, of course, similar pipeline systems across the United States and really across the globe, for that matter. We want to go first to Jackson Van Derbeken, who is a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who covers police and public safety beat. He's in Washington, D.C., where the public hearing is being held. Jackson, are you with? He's not with us yet. Okay. We're going to try to make contact with him if we can. In the meantime, Amy Standen is kind of standing in here. She's a science environment reporter for KQED's Quest. And Amy, actually, I'm looking at the Chronicle screaming headline, mm-hmm. Pipes Origin a Mystery. That kind of says a lot, doesn't
it? Yes, it does. That's actually been the problem that's haunted this whole investigation, is that PG&E had really failed to keep what seemed to be even basic records about these pipelines. So what's happening right now, the NTSB is investigators are presenting their findings from this year-long look into what happened in San Bruno. But it had seemed until now that the board was really trying to lower expectations. They were saying, we just don't know. There were so few records kept on these pipes that we can't really know what went wrong there or where else this kind of thing might happen again. And so far, what's been happening at the meeting has been really pretty damning for PG&E. It's been very, very tough criticism of the record keeping, of the leadership, of the response, pretty much on all aspects of the event.
Let's hear a little bit of that. This is Deborah Hersman, who was chair of the committee. And as Amy said, it's pretty harsh in its response, the committee's response to what happened.
We know now that this tragedy began years ago with PG&E's 1956 installation of a woefully inadequate pipe. It was compounded over the years by a litany of failures, including poor record keeping, inadequate inspection programs, and integrity management programs without integrity.
Without integrity. I mean,
yeah.
It says it all. And yet, PG&E has put out a statement, and I should mention that the statement is, well, it's not without culpability. In fact, quite the contrary. It says we're firmly committed to goals. It's talking really about the future, and it talks about hiring somebody else who has 30 years' experience and implementing more stringent pipeline operation standards and all of those kinds of things, which on paper, of course, look good.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and PG&E is going to have to make some changes. In fact, the company already has made changes. The CEO, Peter Darby, resigned about 6 months ago. He had a background in finance, not in engineering. And one of the criticisms of PG&E this morning has been that the company was much more focused on profits than it was on sort of nuts and bolts engineering, record keeping, the kind of stuff that a utility is supposed to do. So PG&E has been responding. Another of the complaints has been that it took 95 minutes to turn off the gas that was feeding this explosion. And that would not have been the case if PG&E had automatic shutoff valves in place. So one of the announcements, you know, we made, one of the pieces of legislation being proposed right now would require that those valves become standard. And PG&E has also said that it will do pressure testing to inspect the pipelines that are underground right now. But again, PG&E is going to have to make a lot of changes.
We're also learning the company didn't provide local fire department emergency responders with information that was needed to respond. Amy, thank you so much for we're going to get a specific update from Jason Van Derbeken, who is in Washington, who's at the hearings and managed to step away for a moment. Jackson Van Derbeken joins us from the nation's capital. Good morning.
Good morning.
What have we learned so far that we didn't know in terms of what's come out before, Jackson?
Well, there's been a lot of summary of a lot of events that led up to this. I mean, we've had a technical accounting of just what went wrong that day and a very stark view of PG&E. I think piling on would be a euphemism. The general impression that the board members conveyed was this company was out of control and it just wasn't on any level operating in a responsive way.
So it's been, at this point, pretty tough on PG&E continuing, huh?
Oh, I think that PG&E, its practices, they were specifically, there were questions essentially saying, is there any company that acts like this? You know, it was quite a startling moment. And sometimes the NTSB staff had trouble, you know, putting into words, you know, what they discovered in the course of their investigation and in the context of what little had been done. I mean, they have this operating center, the SCADA operating center, and essentially they found that no one was really running the place. They had a lot of Indians, but there wasn't any real person to serve as overlord to basically confer and discuss the information, and they were in a state of denial about what happened. They sent an untrained worker to turn off the gas and never really, it was self-assigned folks who showed up. So there were a lot of, you know, serious breakdowns across the board. And we haven't even gotten to how regulators and how PG&E operated within the regulations yet.
It's Jackson Van Derbeken with us from Washington, again, a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. We're going to bring Congresswoman Jackie Speier into this discussion. She's also in Washington, Congresswoman from the U.S. House of Representatives, representing the 12th Congressional District. Good morning, Jackie Speier.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you. Well, this is what we could call, I suppose, a tragedy of serious and profound errors. Where are we going from here, do you think?
Well, the problem is that as brutal as this indictment has been of PG&E, Congress is virtually tone deaf. And the two bills that are making their way through the process, one on the Senate side, one on the House, for the most part, continue to take a hands-off approach in terms of regulation. And in fact, do not even require that automatic or remote shutoff valves be used for any pipes unless they are new pipes or replaced pipes. So again, we have the problem of grandfathering in older pipe where, you know, much of the problem could in fact exist. I think that I was pretty stunned, as was Jackson, that the scathing rebuke of PG&E was so out there and for everyone to hear. I mean, there were no punches pulled here at all. And at one point, the chair referenced the inadequate integrity management plan that had no integrity. So it's been a very there hasn't been any sugarcoating of anything here today.
Well, Congresswoman, I've got a list of PG&E's a catalog of what they're supposedly going to put into implementation now to correct things. Problems are some of these pipes, if they don't have documentation or records, some of these pipes go back way before 1970, and you've got really customers probably going to pay for safety improvements of any gas pipeline system, and it's going to come on their heads, isn't it?
Well, that's the problem. I think the new plan that PG&E just unveiled, it's tagged at 2.1 $1 billion is one that is being borne almost exclusively by the ratepayers. And that is just unacceptable. And while it's before the CPUC, I think it's very important for all of us to speak out about how that is not a ratio that is fair. And in part, all of these safety measures are being put in place now because PG&E ignored its responsibilities historically and was, you know, putting out shareholder dividends and not spending the money on the necessary improvements. And then oftentimes when they were asking for rate increases, the rate increases were being given to them, but then the work wasn't being done as adequately as it should have been. So it's the only good thing you can say about this horrific tragedy is that CPUC has, you know, regained a sense of responsibility for being a regulator that doesn't just rubber stamp everything. That PG&E now with a $2 billion exposure in terms of claims that have been filed, recognizes that its system was woefully inadequate. And for all of the ratepayers in the region, there's going to be a sense, I believe, that safety is going to be restored to a system that has been plagued with problems. Now, I will say that one of the things that came out today was that these 5 to 6 pups that were actually constructed on the pipeline on 132.
Those are the short section of the pipes, the pups.
Correct. Yeah. And it was pup one that first was defective and caused part of the explosion, that this was done by PG&E workers. So the extent to which this was a common practice for PG&E workers to do this kind of work with pipe that is clearly inadequate, where else in the system does that exist? That's why a complete review is mandatory to make sure that we don't have other problems like this. And then again, you know, the SCADA system, which has come under some scrutiny here today, at one point one of the staff said SCADA was in denial. The pressures had dropped and they were just in denial that something was going wrong, and they did not have in place a system to respond.
Democratic Congresswoman Jackie Speier, who represents California's 12th Congressional District, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Michael.
And I ought to mention, by the way, that there are going to be, of course, there is going to be an investigation by the Department of Justice as well as a filing of many lawsuits, as you can well imagine. We want to bring Jerry Hill into this discussion, and Jerry Hill has some legislation in the works. In fact, he's a Democratic Assemblyman of the 19th District in San Mateo and is in the California State Assembly and is with us online now. Jerry, good to have you with us. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning to you.
Let's talk about, first of all, your reaction to what's come out of this report.
Well, I think you earlier stated it correctly. It was very comprehensive. The analysis was so thorough, and it is scathing against PG&E. The fact that in 1981 they were told of their poor record keeping and some of the actions that led up to the events of last year, and they failed to make follow those recommendations. And then in 2008 in Rancho Cordova, the 1981 was in San Francisco. In 2008 in Rancho Cordova by Sacramento, similar conditions. They were told with recommendations, and they didn't follow those either. My concern, and hopefully the vigilance of all of us, will make sure that these changes do take place and we do see some improvement. But it was scathing. I think Deborah Hirschman, in her comments, there were systemic deficiencies at PG&E, and certainly it was a flawed pipe, flawed operation, and flawed oversight. I think that tells the whole story.
And PG&E is going to need to speed up the state-mandated verifications of gas line safety or simply replace with new pipes. You are putting forward some legislation, I understand, on pipeline safety. What's in the works?
Well, we have a number of provisions in the bill. That one is to not allow ratepayer money to be used for any penalties assessed by the PUC, to also require automatic or remote shutoff valves as required by the CPUC, to, you know, establish some minimum standards there. And in pipeline repairs, Congresswoman Speier mentioned that in many cases PG&E would ask for funds and money to make repairs, and then they would not make the repairs, and that money would go back into their profits. So this would require reporting of those funds, and if they were not used, where they went. Also require safety reports twice a year to be submitted to the commission, require emergency responders to meet annually to have plans in place, and then to have better inspections. So one thing that's interesting is PG&E did, you know, as we've heard since the event, that they come out talking about how safety is now important. However, is part of this legislation that I had, that they were successful in getting removed from it because of their political influence in Sacramento, was a part that stated in the bill that the PUC shall consider safety when determining rates in the future. PG&E has the second highest rate of return at over 11% of any utility in the country. And to have this type of performance, this type of record, and the report we're seeing today with that type of profit that we've allowed them to have, but yet they took out of the bill, they were able to get from the Utilities Committee in the Senate, remove that portion that says that safety should be considered in rate making. And so that makes it difficult, and so the bill lost that key provision, and PG&E was right there fighting against it.
Kind of boils down, doesn't it, Assemblyman, to the fact that PG&E knew they had a seam weld risk and they didn't address it?
Absolutely, and that goes back to your question earlier of who's going to pay for this in the future. I find it just reprehensible that PG&E would expect us to pick up 90% of that tab for repairing the system or even inspecting the system because, number one, as we see today in the report, they were negligent when they installed this infrastructure in this pipe. They did it improperly. They didn't test it properly. And then after that, they as we saw also, they spiked the pressure in this line that could have weakened the pipes over time due to their negligence, and then the negligent record-keeping that they had for many years, not being able to identify the source. And because of those, what I consider negligent behavior, now they have to go back and test, they have to verify, and they have to replace, if necessary, these pipes. Well, that's certainly not our fault. We already paid for these pipes one time, and why should we have to do that again? So there will be a lot of questions, certainly, that I'll be raising, and I'm sure others will as well, as this moves forward through the Public Utilities Commission.
And Jerry Hill is Democratic Assembly Member of the 19th District, San Mateo, California State Assembly. Assemblyman, thank you for joining us on forum.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure.
And by the way, if you'd like to join us, let me give out the phone number if you have some responses or reactions to what you've heard about the report so far and what you've heard particularly about the strong indictment against PG&E. We'd like you to join this conversation. It's toll-free, and you can join us now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, so feel free to join the program. Again, it's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. Meantime, I want to go back to Jackson Van Derbeken, the reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who is with us from Washington, who has been covering this and continues to cover it as the hearings go on. I'm actually mindful here, Jackson, about some statements made by UC civil engineering professor Robert Bee, who was talking about PG&E actually spiking the pressures two times on this line, this 132 line, and the effects of this repeated pressure, which essentially makes more stress on gas pressures, makes them fluctuate, and affects the ability to operate safely.
Well, that's one of the things we're going to be dealing with. They mentioned it briefly today, this morning so far, but this afternoon they're going to talk about PG&E's operations and why they went about doing this and what possible impact it might have. They were looking at the record. They were looking at the records that PG&E had about the pressure, and they basically found that they don't have any records before 1998 about how PG&E operated this line. And the three largest pressure increases over time were the two spikes that PG&E engaged in 2003 and then again in 2008, and then the one that caused was coinciding the failure itself. So
we're talking about poor record keeping and lack of safety tests, both.
Well, that's right, and PG&E just doesn't have the kind of records that can really give them any firm idea of what there's a particular event that might have triggered what they call a ductal tear, which was basically the trigger point. And then it was just a matter of when this line was going to fail, not if. So they haven't, because one of the things is they don't have records about pressure going back for very long, they can't really calibrate where these pressure spikes fit in. Obviously, it's not good to jack up the pressure on a line this fragile with welds this inferior. So the question is, when did that particular event, you know, cascade? It's unclear, and I don't think they'll ever know without the information about the long-term operations of the line.
Jackson, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Jackson Van Derbeken, reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, and joining us in studio is Bill McGoolahan, who's a San Bruno resident. His house was severely damaged from the pipeline explosion. Good to have you here, Bill. Thanks for joining us. Well, what's your reaction to this report?
Well, it's great news. It's great to hear that people are taking this seriously. And, you know, we've been saying these things in San Bruno now for almost a year. So it's great to be validated and to know that, you know, our legislators are behind us, that the CPUC is changing the way it views things, and that PG&E is becoming more committed to safety and less committed to worrying about profits.
And you, with your four children now, I mean, your wife was pregnant, I know, when this took place. Your house was set on fire. There was severe damage, also asbestos problems. I mean, you went through quite an ordeal.
We've gone through a lot. We basically lost everything that we owned, except for some end tables. Fortunately, we were able to save really important things like our wedding photos, our wedding videos, the things that we got in China when we adopted our first daughter. Those things were salvaged. A lot of my neighbors didn't get to do that. When we first were staying at the hotel that Thursday night, we thought we had lost everything. So we definitely know how they felt, because that's how we felt going to sleep the night, or trying to go to sleep that night. We thought we'd lost everything. Lost our home, lost our belongings, and even lost our dog. So things have actually worked out okay for us. We consider ourselves extremely lucky, ironically.
And you're living in Belmont now, renting, and PG&E is taking care of the rent?
No, the insurance company, our insurance company, Travelers, is paying the rent on our the house we're living in. We're continuing to pay the mortgage on the house that we're not living in.
You see PG&E, and did from the beginning, as being totally culpable here.
Absolutely.
And this just confirms.
It absolutely confirms it. We've been saying it for a long time. There's a litany of errors, litany of failures. A lot of things had to go wrong for such a terrible, destructive event to occur.
Well, I know you're exhilarated by this report because it confirms all that you have felt. And yet, at the same time, there's no teeth, no real enforcement in this report.
That's the problem. Really, the NTSB, what are they going to do besides give recommendations or suggestions? What we really need to see them do is require the CPUC to fine PG&E a very large amount of money, a record fine. We need them to require that legislation gets passed to make sure that all the things went wrong don't go wrong again anywhere throughout the nation.
Because this is not only a national problem, it really is a global problem, as I said earlier. And these pipelines are everywhere, and people don't see them. And, you know, you're making common cause with a lot of the fellow homeowners there in San Bruno, though?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, a lot of the homeowners we meet, we're on a Yahoo group together. We're discussing a lot of things. These are the things that come up every meeting. We just had a meeting on Friday. A lot of people are still struggling with this. They remain hopeful that they'll recover. But, you know, the anniversary is a real challenge for us. It's bringing back a lot of memories. My children are having nightmares again. My wife is stressed. There's a lot of stress throughout the whole community.
Your home was red tagged first, wasn't it?
Initially.
Changed to yellow tag?
That's correct. So we were on the original red tag bus tour through the neighborhood. The city of San Bruno put us on some tour buses and actually drove us through the community so we could see the devastation firsthand. And as we drove by, we took some pictures, and we were looking at the pictures later. We realized that we had been changed from red tag to yellow tag, which, of course, was great news.
Bill McGoolahan with us in studio, San Bruno resident, and as I said earlier, his house was severely damaged from the pipeline explosion. When do you plan on moving back in?
We should be back in by January. The house is under construction. The outside is mostly done. We just started putting in the wood floors yesterday, so we're making great progress. We have a wonderful architect, Andre Rothblatt. We have a great construction crew out there, and making a lot of progress very quickly. So we're looking forward. We're hoping to get back by Christmas, but at least by January.
Good luck to you. I hope you can make it, and stay with us for the hour. In fact, you, our listeners, stay with us for the hour because we're going to continue and hear from you on this. Again, you can call us at our toll-free number and join this conversation. Your reaction to the report put out by the National Transportation Safety Board's final report on the PG&E pipeline explosion almost a year later. Our toll-free number again, 866-733-6786. Our email address, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. We'll hear from you when we return. On Forum, I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The National Transportation Safety Board issuing its final report today in Washington on the PG&E pipeline explosion, the worst, by the way, in a decade, and took the lives of 8 people, destroyed 38 homes in San Bruno last year. And after reviewing 14,000 pages of public record, the NTSB has revealed its conclusions and is doing so as we speak during a hearing that has been set today. Deborah Hirschman, who chaired the report and the commission report, was talking about smart meters and what they can do and all about the new technology, and expressed her, concern about why PG&E couldn't communicate about a rupture.
It's baffling to me that they can monitor homes with two-way communication and give people email updates, but yet you have people in a SCADA center that's supposed to be modernized, and for a good half an hour, they can't even isolate where the rupture occurred.
Well, Paul Rogers is with us, environmental reporter for the San Jose Mercury News, managing editor at Quest, KQED Science and Environment Series. We have Paul on the line?
Yes. Hi,
yeah,
Michael.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm great.
Good to have you. What about that statement we just heard from Deborah Hirschman? Fact is that it's too baffling to communicate about a rupture, but they can do all that smart meter stuff.
Well, it is indicative of the tone of the hearing so far. The board members of the NTSB have come down pretty hard on PG&E for what Hirschman categorized as, quote, a litany of failures. And, the fact that their gas operations center in San Francisco didn't really clearly know what was going on, even an hour after the blast, has come for some pretty scathing criticism. One of the interesting things also that's been fleshed out here is that two of the main theories on why the pipe blew up were discounted this morning. This question of the sewer job that was done in 2008 right next to the pipe. They basically had run calculations, and NTSB investigators said it apparently was not shaking the ground enough to crack the pipe. And then this question of pressure surges over time, they also discounted that. So there hasn't really been a dramatic new sort of Perry Mason moment where someone comes in and tells us the cause of the explosion in a clear way that we didn't, beyond the facts that we already know.
I'm looking at some emails from listeners here. Here's Bruce in Oakland, who says, I distinctly remember smelling gas while driving up Sneath Lane more than 6 months before the explosion. I only wish I had made a report at that time. I've heard stories of residents complaining to PG&E about smelling gas only to have an employee check in and around their house and find nothing. I remember in the aftermath that PG&E saying they had received no complaints. What does the report have to say about how many residents complained before the incident? This came up, I remember, a year ago when we talked about it. Can you shed any light on this?
Not yet, because they haven't actually released the report yet. It's still in draft form, and no members of the public or journalists have seen it yet. They're going to release a synopsis of it about 20 minutes after the hearing ends this afternoon, and then the full report will come out in a couple of weeks.
Again, that's Paul Rogers with us, environmental reporter for the San Jose Mercury News and managing editor of our KQED Quest, the Science and Environmental Series. I want to bring Jim Ruane into this. He's mayor of San Bruno, and I think we have you on the line, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Glad to have you. Well, we're getting reactions far and wide to the report. What's yours?
As well you should be. I can sum this morning up in two words: organizational deficiencies on the part of PG&E. It was explained very thoroughly about their emergency response, their plans, and a lot of them just didn't exist. It didn't exist enough where they could have prevented a disaster like what happened in our city.
We invited PG&E, of course, to participate in this morning's program. They declined, but they did put out a statement on the NTSB hearings, and they say, we remain firmly committed to the goal of making sure that accidents don't happen in the future and the pipelines are safe and, you know, the sort of things that you could expect rhetorically. Does that reassure you in any respect, Mayor?
Well, I mean, I would expect that would be something that they would put out. My concern here, and going back, I said we can't undo what happened in San Bruno, but we can certainly prevent it from happening in communities in the future. That this could have, most likely been prevented had they done their work, had they inspected the line, had they maintained the line, had they kept proper records. And it was very, very frustrating, although very thorough this morning, to hear from NTSB that those things didn't occur.
What about the enforcement ability of NTSB? We were talking with one of your residents about the fact that there doesn't seem to be much teeth, even though the report certainly confirms what a lot of people suspected and felt.
Well, the NTSB will make their strong recommendations today and in the following weeks, and it's up to PHMSA, to CPUC, to all of this stuff to trickle down, if you will, to PG&E. And as far as NTSB's recommendations, we are committed as a city that lost eight people, eight friends, family, destroyed a neighborhood, traumatized the city forever, to follow up on this and to put as much pressure as we possibly can on our local legislators and our federal legislators to follow through with these recommendations.
Jim Ruane, who is mayor of San Bruno. Thank you so much, Mayor, for joining us.
Thank you, Michael.
Another listener writes, the most important issue in this story for me is the way maintenance managers get their bonuses. In a recent newspaper article, former whistleblowers talked about the fact that there are gas leaks all over PG&E's system. Many times, according to these whistleblowers, quotes, management would do a subpar repair or not fix it at all because the less money they spend, the bigger the bonus check. An obvious conflict of interest and the first thing to address to bring some accountability to PG&E. And another listener, Bob in Campbell, writes, my thoughts are still with those that suffered due to the tragedy. Doesn't PG&E charge its customers for upkeep of its infrastructure? It's difficult to tell for sure because of the way they list billing items. It would be a surprise if they didn't. What it looks like, PG&E is more interested in compensating the higher-ups than doing due diligence to protect the public. And now PG&E wants the public to pick up most of the tab for the incompetence of PG&E. This is a perfect example of why regulation is needed. Let me go to your calls. We'll go to Palo Alto. Cindy, good morning. I'm sorry, she's listening to the radio. Let me go to the next call. In fact, let me go to an email here that says public utilities should be public, not profit motivated. You'd expect that response. And another listener writes, why is it no person goes to jail or pays for decisions that kill people? PG&E had those records. They just burned them and decided to pay the fine for record keeping. And now they want ratepayers to pay for new pipes. We're going to get you on the record here, Paul Rogers, if we can, about all this anger about bonuses and profit and what we're suggesting is maybe even accountability of a criminal or a felonious nature.
Well, the question has arisen as to why is it that PG&E was able to produce voluminous reports from the 1948 installation of this line in other parts of the peninsula, you know, week by week updates from the foreman, very detailed bills and receipts. All of this is part of the NTSB record. But then on the key part that exploded, they've produced almost nothing. Basic questions about whether they inspected the line, where these six small pieces of pipe called pups, which is where the explosion occurred, they were so poorly welded, where they were obtained from and who welded them and the names of the welders and where else in the Bay Area did these guys weld that did such shoddy work. That stuff has not come out through NTSB. And, of course, you know, some folks have said, well, what if they destroyed the records? And there's no evidence they did that. If any came to light, those are certainly felonies or the kind of things that people can go to jail for. At this point, we don't have any evidence of that. The San Mateo County District Attorney has been looking at all aspects of the case. And, you know, certainly this is an issue that is going to continue for years. Where are all these records? What happened to them?
Well, Rick Hooperwitz is here to talk with us. He's president of Accufax Incorporated. They're a Richmond, Washington-based pipeline safety firm, and he's been certainly quite verbal about his concern about the pipelines, which, as I said, not only is national but global. And, Rick, it's good to have you aboard here. Welcome.
Glad to be aboard.
Well, it's not been determined where the ruptured pipe segment even came from or who's responsible for it because of this lack of documentation responsible for the many welding defects. But there's greater risk out there. I mean, this is really and ought to be of concern of citizens all over because the implications for this are, as I've been saying, not only national but global.
That's correct. And this is probably indicative of a more systematic problem that's probably in more than one system, in more than one company.
And yet we're getting from PG&E, in fact, a listener says here, why isn't PG&E on the show today? Instead of being a good corporate citizen and neighbor and open to a vigorous dialogue, they further exhibit their hubris by dismissing their responsibility to participate in such public discussions. I said that they did put out a statement, Rick, and they're talking about creating a separating operating unit, implementing more stringent pipeline operating standards, hiring more than 90 new gas engineers and providing additional training to gas operation employees. All this seems certainly well-intentioned.
Well, and I think that's a good start here. I think the NTSB report, again, we haven't heard all the presentations yet today, but they've clearly indicated there's going to be 10 recommendations directed at various parties. I think that's kind of like a let's get the process moving forward a little quicker. I think the suggestion that they need to set up a separate gas transmission unit makes a lot of sense. So looking forward, I think it's important to be sure that what we're doing moving forward is in a positive direction that's effective and efficient. So that's a good start. Let's see, the devils are going to be in the details here.
We've got some pretty old pipes out there, don't we, though?
Well, it's not so much age that's an issue. It's how well they've been maintained and various other issues like the records and, you know, what confidence do you have that you really understand the system and you're dealing with the various threats that may be associated with some of the age factors. But I caution people that we've had recent major pipelines, multi-billion-dollar pipelines built where they're fairly brand new and they've ruptured because of various other things. So just being new in itself isn't an end-all if you aren't managing it, you know, wisely or prudently.
Well, let me bring a caller on here. And, David, that's you. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Michael. You know, it's interesting listening to this. Basically, if you think about it, if you're a public entity and you're going to allow a corporation to come in and do a bit of work, and they're going to put a structure up like a bridge or a pipeline, they have to have a performance bond. They have to have some proof that they, if they screw up, they have the assets to compensate those that they've harmed. And does PG&E even, with deregulation of the late 90s, that what led to Enron, they created the ability for these energy companies to be colonies of areas of the world, and that they don't even do performance bonds anymore because they're essentially a colonizer. And this idea of giving a public utility status, you know, they were trusted enough to build a pipeline. And if they didn't keep basic records for example, my sister bought an old stained glass shop. She kept, it was a 100-year-old shop when she bought it. They had 100-year-old records in there because they wanted to keep their clients. Is PG&E running it like a business and not keeping their clients' data, keeping information on their own clients? They should have lost their public utility status years ago. We should just do asset forfeiture, and if it's a criminal activity for asset forfeiture, that's fine. Otherwise, it's a public hazard. If they don't have records of what's going through every zip code in the Bay Area, then they're creating a public hazard, and their public utility status should be lifted based upon lack of a performance or lack of performance bond.
All right, David. I appreciate hearing from you. We'll let that stand. We'll get another caller on immediately after. Edmund, that's you. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to raise the issue of personal responsibility and also the consideration of criminal negligence. So I would call upon the Governor Brown to institute a grand jury for further action.
Okay, thank you for that. Bill McGoolahan, how do you feel about that? In fact, I'm looking at an email here from Tom who says, as you know, in China, the CEO found to have been negligent and having caused deaths might very well be executed. Is there no criminal liability for these public utility executives? What happened to Sarbic? CEOs are criminally liable for financial fraud but not operating negligence. You feel there should be prosecution?
Yeah, I think that there should be prosecution. I mean, what do we do when corporations behave badly? What are the ramifications of all of the bad decisions that they've made and the negligence, basically, in the inspection techniques they were using and in maintaining these lines? Something needs to be done. And, you know, obviously we've got lawsuits going. We'd like to get into court as soon as possible. So
the Department
that
of Justice is involved in investigation.
That is correct. We'd also like to have our civil trials get into court as soon as possible and move forward with a very transparent Kirk case so we can let everybody know what the facts are. The NTSB has dug into it. I think there's further things that are going to be coming up. And I think that, you know, it's time to get PG&E to pay for what they've done.
Well, Paul Rogers, you want to hazard a guess of the likelihood of some criminal prosecutions moving forward with this?
No, I don't, actually. I don't think at this point that would be responsible until the final NTSB report's out and more of these facts are out. But, you know, I think in terms of some of the questions that have come up in the last few minutes, the State Public Utilities Commission did not regulate and inspect gas lines in 1956. It was up to PG&E to do that. And so even though PG&E has said we can't find the records of where these pups came from, it has been established that their crews put the pipes in the ground. And in the end, they're responsible for what they own and what they put in the ground. So there's going to be a lot of talk about, well, we had different standards back then, and we don't have a trail of paper that shows exactly who did the welding. But as one of the board members, Sumwalt, pointed out this morning, he said, quote, it doesn't really matter where that pipe came from. PG&E had the responsibility to inspect it and operate it and maintain it. That was their responsibility. So I think those are the kind of arguments you're going to hear in these civil cases going forward, and you could very well see, you know, this whole thing costing more than $1 billion for PG&E civilly. Criminally, I have no idea.
Paul Rogers, again, environmental reporter for the San Jose Mercury News and managing editor at Quest, KQED's Science and Environment series. And if you've just joined us, we're talking about the fact that the National Transportation Safety Board is issuing today and holding public hearings, issuing their final conclusions on the San Bruno pipeline explosion. Dave in San Mateo writes, the San Bruno explosion is just one of the most egregious examples of regulatory capture at both the federal and state level. As long as we continue to slap corporations on the wrist with fines rather than enforce proper oversight or put people in jail, deaths will continue to happen due to a religious belief in the free market's ability to solve everything. And another listener, Clem, says, if corporations are people and a person has committed grossly negligent manslaughter, what's the punishment? I also think that PG&E no longer deserves to exist as a corporation, so it should be taken over by eminent domain, give the corporate death penalty. I think there should be a clawback of the former PG&E CEO wages because he's personally profited from repairs never done and all the other failures on his part. And Sharon from Montesereno says, the entity that regulates PG&E told it several times to fix problems. PG&E didn't. Why didn't the regulatory body check on whether PG&E had followed through? There's a question, Rick Cooperwitz, and I'd like to get you on record here, particularly about all this anger that's coming forward that says there should be criminal prosecution and more serious and severe accountability.
I completely can understand. And what you're hearing probably is a very strong indication that the public may not have a lot of confidence in the operator, a lot of credibility. So how do you go about establishing that? I think the start is let the NTSB finish their process. I have a lot of faith in that organization. It's a clear example of a government organization that actually works. I've seen it work for many decades. None of the things they're coming up with today or reporting today are a surprise. But let's let the process run its course. I think the key operative word they've been using today is an organizational accident. That's probably a code word for many things that need to be addressed in the company. I think the test of time will be, you know, what will be the game plan and what role will the regulators play in implementing that game plan? And I think we're going to hear more about that in the NTSB discussions or presentations this afternoon.
Well, we're learning from the NTSB just how complicated this is, how multifactorial, as they call it, how it's particularly, of course, difficult to get to the causes and the origins when you don't have documentation. But what about a documentation of especially aging pipelines, Rick Cooperwitz? What ought to be put into place there?
Well, process-wise, what you're going to have to do is it's back to the integrity management rulemaking and actually the current regulations. What have we done here? What's been gamed and what's been not followed that was intended to be followed? I think what's going to happen, you've already seen the process start here with the focus on hydro testing and inline inspection. So I think the regulators, both at the federal and the state level, as well as the pipeline operator, are going to have to present a plan that the public can understand. And that plan has to have a sufficient timeline where you deal with these uncertainties very quickly, because you don't have a lot of time here.
Again, Bill Cooperwitz is president of Accufax, a Redmond, Washington-based pipeline safety firm. And let's go to more of your calls. We'll go to Piedmont. Colby, join us. You're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is there a precedent or are there any examples, either inside or outside California, where infrastructure types of companies were charged or taxed for problems that they created?
Can you help us out on that, Paul Rogers?
I'm not sure I fully understand the question.
So earlier you stated that, for example, essentially customers would be charged like 90%. Someone said this, 90%.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
and
that's actually PG&E's proposal to the Public Utilities Commission, that it's going to cost them $2 billion in the next 3 or 4 years to modernize lines all over the Bay Area and Northern California, and they want ratepayers to pay 90% of that. Now, whether that will happen is up to the PUC, which is 5 members appointed by Governor Brown.
I think the caller's asking, though, aren't you, whether there's precedent for going against that kind of recommendation or going with
it? Oh, sure.
Yeah,
and there's going to be great pressure on them, and certainly... you know, a lot of the political leaders that we've quoted in the paper and that have been quoted in other media in the last couple of days, people like Congresswoman Jackie Speier, Assemblyman Jerry Hill, who represents that area, are saying, no way, no how should the public pay 90% of this.
Let me thank the caller. How do you feel about that, Bill McGoolahan, public paying 90%?
It's ludicrous. And I think what we need to do is figure out a way to fine PG&E 1 year's worth of profits, which is roughly $1 billion, and be able to use that money to let it go back to the victims and also let it go back to what PG&E should have been doing. They have their Pipeline 2020 program, which I think should be called Hindsight 2020. They should have been doing these things over the last 10 to 20 years. And a fine of $1 billion could go back to get them to do all the things they need to do so they don't profit again from, you know, fixing all the problems that they caused.
And again, Bill McGoolahan is a San Bruno resident whose house was severely damaged from the pipeline explosion a year ago. Paul Rogers, if I can go back to you, what's expected for the rest of today in terms of these hearings, and when are the conclusions going to be available?
I think we're going to get more questions from board members, more reports from staff, and then 20 minutes after it's all over, which, you know, if I were just going to totally hazard a guess, would be, you know, mid-afternoon our time, early afternoon our time, they're going to release the synopsis of findings and also recommendations, you know, on how to improve pipeline safety nationwide based on the lessons learned in this tragedy. One other point I would just mention, this question about line 132, the line that blew up today, and the risk to the public. It should be noted that the PUC has ordered PG&E already to do extensive record searches, and then for those sections of pipe where they can't find records that verify the pressure that the pipes are operating at, they have to do hydro tests involving very expensive tests where you put water through the pipes at high pressure to find defects and flaws. They have about 150 miles of pipe to do by the end of the year in the Bay Area. They're already working on sections of Line 32 right now. I was out in Mountain View last week standing over a trench where they were doing this work. So there is some work ongoing. It's not like it's just sitting there with no action happening. But, you know, as many people have pointed out, it's after the fact.
Well, I'm also curious to know what your thoughts are about just how much PG&E is, shall we say, mandated by this or even compelled by this report and the findings in this report. I'm looking at the statement by Chris Johns, who is the president of PG&E, and he says... essentially compliments the NTSB and their investigation and says it's going to be critical in helping us. I don't know what that means exactly. What do you think?
Well, they've agreed in that filing last week with the Public Utilities Commission, where they're trying to get the public to pay 90% of the upkeep and the modernization of the lines. They have agreed to put in more than 200 of these automatic shutoff valves that would have closed the gas off in San Bruno in a half an hour or less rather than an hour and a half. They've agreed to make other changes that experts have recommended. The key question, though, is if there are going to be some real sweeping national changes, some of that could require acts of Congress. And Mr. Kuperwitz knows more about this than I do, but my sense is that particularly in the House right now, Republican members are not looking to add a lot of new regulations and rules to industry. And although pipeline safety has generally been a bipartisan issue, I would be surprised if the Boehner House puts in place a lot of costly new rules on the pipeline industry.
Do you want to comment on that, Rick Kuperwitz? Your perspective?
Well, I think that's a valid comment, observation. There's a lot of people that just argue that they don't want government regulation at all, and I just advise various parties, just keep blowing up neighborhoods and see how well that goes over with the voters. I think, as a public advocate for pipeline safety, I often recommend that we need prudent regulation and effective and efficient regulation. And I think the NTSB's final report's going to point to many areas. They've indicated there's going to be 10 recommendations. I think there's areas there where effective regulation can move the ball forward. They announced or released last week, the PHMSA, the Pipeline Safety Agency, a proposed rulemaking for gas transmission pipelines that address many of these issues. We'll just have to see where it goes. I mean, the process is not necessarily the most efficient way to go forward, but there are people who will rise to the occasion to make sure that a regulation is effective. I found that over the decades.
Well, we've been getting, as I've said, a lot of responses from many of you, both online and through emails and on the air, about criminal negligence and all this. And Loretta Lynch, who formerly held the position of president of the California Public Utilities Commission, called in to tell us, and I'm quoting here, "My position is PG&E is criminally negligent." I'm also looking at an email from Mary, who says, "It was reported that PG&E shifted $1 billion in profits to their upper-tier corporate entity during Enron. They should be obligated to download that money for their proposed improvements. I wholeheartedly agree with the idea that they should be public, not private entity. As an occupant of the geologically unstable East Bay Hills, it's nerve-wracking thinking of what condition their gas pipes are in anyone's neighborhood." And let's go to Fremont. Tim, join us. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, I have a question. I'm curious why nobody asked the obvious question here, and that is that every other for-profit corporation in the world has to pay for their infrastructure and maintain their infrastructure out of their corporate profits, but not PG&E. They're constantly going to the PUC to get money to do this and money to do that. They want to build a nuclear plant. Then they want to decommission a nuclear plant. You know what? They pay for it out of their corporate profits.
Well, you know, this brings up an interesting question. Paul Rogers, I don't know how well aware you are of the kind of corporate structure in terms of PG&E's financing, but they've had sort of a kind of, well, double structure going on in many instances. Can you address that?
Well, this is a very complicated and interesting issue. Basically, PG&E, every few years, and other regulated utilities in California, they put in what are called rate cases, these very, very thick, you know, multiple telephone books thick reports where they spell out how much they want to raise rates and what they're going to use the money for. And, you know, very few people look at this stuff. Reporters regularly haven't been covering it, particularly as the media shrunk in recent years. There aren't a lot of activist groups that take the time to wade through it all, you know. And so there's not a lot of oversight. And I think there's going to be a lot more after this. But there's even questions about when PG&E has been given rate increases to do the work, whether they've, whether they've fully done all the work. And I think that's what we can say going forward. People are going to be paying a lot closer attention from now on.
Well, we will indeed pay more attention, and this report has made us pay more attention. I want to thank all who participated in this important hour that we've done a year later on the National Transportation Safety Board, almost a year later. Final report. We'll continue to follow it. Thank you for being with us. Another hour of Forum is up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.